This is Bullcast, an audio production of the Office of the Staffer's Advocate. Bullcast provides subject matter expert discussion and commentary on topics of interest to the Innovation Command.
Welcome to the first ever Bullcast, presented by the members of the Office of the Staff Judge Advocate and the Business Operations Law Division. Special thanks to our SJA, Colonel Greg Marchand, and his bandmates for supplying this podcast's theme music. The purpose of this podcast series is to provide you with expert discussion and commentary on topics of interest to the Innovation Command. The podcast is not intended to provide legal advice, and the views expressed represent those of the individual speakers, not of the United States government. First, let me introduce myself. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Scott Felder, and I joined the Innovation Command as the Chief of the Business Operations Law Division at the end of May. In my civilian capacity, I'm a partner at a law firm in Washington, D.C., with a practice that focuses on the intersection of intellectual property and government contracts. I look forward to meeting all of you in person as soon as it is safe to do so. In the meantime, my team and I are hard at work preparing self-guided tools like this podcast to help you execute your mission. Of course, the OSJA team are always willing to field your questions or sit down and take a deep dive on any areas in which you may be interested. And we'd also love to hear your feedback on how we can make our knowledge products more useful to you. Today's episode is going to discuss proprietary information and intellectual property. We'll largely be tackling this topic through the lens of a tech scout, but all Innovation Command soldiers should understand how we, that is the government, can use and disclose our industry partners' proprietary information. For this discussion, I'm joined by my OSGA colleague, Major Thomas Johnson. Thomas, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So, Thomas, since we're going to be chatting about how our soldiers should handle proprietary information, let's start with an overview of just what our industry partners mean when they say that something is proprietary information.
Absolutely. By way of introduction, I'm Major Thomas Johnson. Innovation Command, I'm the Chief of Administrative Law, and I'm just glad that I can contribute to that and this in the business law section that we're developing. So proprietary information is kind of anything that you own. If you look at it as like intellectual property, it's kind of any work or a technology or a way of doing something that's unique in such a way that you can apply for a patent or a trademark, something that gets you legal recognition and ownership and therefore legal protections that you can pursue. And proprietary information intellectual property is a kind of proprietary information. It just says you own it. And if you own it just because it's not a car, just because it's not a boat or something that's tangible, doesn't mean that you can't own it, and therefore you can't be taken advantage of by others who would take that idea and run with it.
Yeah, that's a great point, Thomas. I mean, I can't remember whether it was one of my law professors or one of my colleagues at some point in the past that said property ownership means never having to say you're sorry, that you own something. That means you have the right to exclude others. You know, it's not always all about what you can do with the particular piece of property, but it's also about your ability to sort of put up the keep off the grass sign and don't come on my property unless you have reason to be here. And I think, a lot of times that's what our industry partners are really saying to us when they say, hey, this is proprietary. They're telling us, keep off the grass.
That's right. Yeah.
They may not all mean the same thing when they say that. Some of them may mean, never set foot on my grass. Some of them may mean, well, if you want to come on my grass, you can only do so between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. or only, to water my lawn or to feed my dog or whatever. They'll sort of have limits around it. I think one thing that our soldiers can sort of take away is most of the time, if one of our industry partners thinks that some information they're sharing with us is entitled to some sort of special legal protection, which is really ultimately what they're sort of after when they say it's proprietary.
Yeah, that's right.
Is they're going to tell us? They're not, it's not going to be some great mystery.
No, not at all. And in fact, a lot of times they're also going to give us or ask us to look at a non-disclosure agreement. That's an agreement between the parties that says, hey, if I share something with you, that you're not going to turn around and use that for your own benefit or share it with somebody else without us having agreed to that. And we, in the Innovation Command, we actually can't sign those unless they come from us. So that's one of the reasons why we're having this podcast, is so that the Tech Scouts and anybody in the Innovation Command who finds themselves in this position knows that hey, if this vendor comes to me, or if I meet with them, or I'm in academia, and they say, hey, just, you know, slide this piece of paper over. Can you just sign this non-disclosure agreement that promises that you're not going to, you know, give our trade secrets away? You have to respectfully and politely decline, because that's not something that we're empowered to do. That can only be done at the upper levels and with specific authority. So best thing that we can do is we can offer to let those folks know that they're already protected through like the Trade Secrets Act or the Procurement Integrity Act, the Army Directive that came out in 2018 from the Secretary of the Army that speaks very specifically about the Army's desire to do business and at the same time protect vendors and protect their intellectual property. And we have to be careful how we do that. And of course, that's one of the reasons why we're here in the Staff Judge Advocate's office to do that, so that we can either get them approval, get them to the right person to get the approval, or even review with them what we've created for our own document, which is a non-disclosure acknowledgement that doesn't have any obligations on our side, any additional obligations, but it gives the vendor a piece of paper that comes from us that says we're already covered by the Trade Secrets Act. We can already be prosecuted under the Procurement Integrity Act. We already owe you a duty to protect this information, so don't be afraid to talk to us. And that's one of those things, to sum it up, don't sign a non-disclosure agreement if you're a tech scout out there, and consider doing a non-disclosure acknowledgement that comes from us, but do it with us in the Staff Judge Advocate's office.
Yeah, you know, that's really kind of a fraught area with the presentation of an NDA from our industry partners or academia to our tech scouts or our other soldiers, and asking them to execute it. Because, you know, as you pointed out, our individual tech scouts, our individual soldiers don't have the authority to bind the government, which is really what the industry partner is after, right? You know, sign this on behalf of Uncle Sam, so that if Uncle Sam does something bad that I don't like with my proprietary information, I've got legal resource against Uncle Sam.
That's right.
And the problem is, because these folks don't have that authority to bind the United States government, if they sign it, they're actually signing it in their individual capacity. And that means if there's a violation, they're going to be personally liable. And it's really not something that, you know, we and the Office of the Staff Judge Advocate can help with. You know, we're, our client's the Army. And so if we've got an individual soldier that does sign one of these, you know, we can't represent that individual soldier. You know, you raised a really good point in there, several really good points about some of the other legal protections that are around this information, like the Trade Secrets Act, like the Procurement Integrity Act. You know, a lot of these sort of fall generally under the government ethics umbrella, the idea that the government isn't going to use non-public information for, you know, its own gain, that individual employees are not going to use non-public information for their individual gain or for the gain of third parties. That sometimes comes as a little bit of a shock to industry partners, particularly ones who haven't dealt extensively with the federal government. If you're talking to a Boeing or a Lockheed or a Northrop or something, they're going to be pretty familiar with the PIA, the Procurement Integrity Act, or the Trade Secrets Act. You know, if you're getting into some of the non-traditional contractors that I suspect our tech scouts are frequently going to be talking to, you know, that concept might be alien, and they're going to be, again, more familiar with, hey, you know, you got to sign this paper before I agree to share anything with you. You know, that education process that our tech scouts and our soldiers can offer to them, I think is going to be really important. You know, I've had occasion to look into this in my civilian capacity, you know, as to, you know, hey, what, you know, we have a government or potential government contractor who has shared some information with government personnel, and they didn't sign a non-disclosure agreement. You know, they would typically, when they were presenting their technology, have the people to whom they're presenting sign an NDA. But of course, the government doesn't and didn't sign the NDA in this case. And you know, the questions posed, you know, does that mean we have failed to take the necessary steps to protect our intellectual property? And what we were able to find going through that exercise is that there actually is case law out there to support the idea that it's reasonable and appropriate and sort of not damaging to your legal rights if you're an industry to rely on these statutory protections when you're dealing with the government. Now, there's limits to that, of course, and I've seen those limits play out in cases as well. But I do think that we can give some comfort to our industry partners by pointing out the existence, you know, of, hey, there's authority out there that says, you know, if I were a commercial party, I'd have to sign an NDA, but because I'm the government, you can stand in reliance on the Trade Secrets Act, for example.
Yes.
And again, we do have the non-disclosure acknowledgement available through OSGA Bold that can, you know, in writing say, we have these obligations and we will honor these obligations. One other point I want to touch in there sort of before we move on is you mentioned the Army Directive. It's 2018-26,
yeah.
which really does put a pretty strong focus on intellectual property and, you know, being flexible in how we sort of negotiate our relationship to a contractor or an industry partner's intellectual property. That has actually bubbled up with Secretary Esper. So that was Secretary mm-hmm. Esper's policy before he left as Secretary of the Army, became Secretary of Defense. You find sort of the same, I'll say the same spirit in a recent DOD instruction on intellectual property. So, I mean, the Army's out in front of the, you know, leaning out in front of the foxhole here because of Secretary Esper's initiative.
Yeah, I think you're right. And we have a real desire to be respectful of the interest of vendors, because if we get a reputation for whether it's the Army or the DOD, of course, we're in control of the Army part, but we won't want to be that party that gets a reputation for, hey, I met with those guys. And the next thing I know, one of my competitors who I know wasn't headed in that direction is working in that direction. Or you know, this guy seemed to have benefited from that information in his private sector job, but he told me that I was supposed to be, you know, protected, and this information wasn't going to go anywhere outside these walls as we discussed it. So I think that you're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, you know, you're spot on, I think, with sort of the motivation. You know, one of the things I said in the introduction is, you know, my background is the intersection of IP and government contracts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I see all the time is, how do we play out that balance, right? I mean, this is it's a complex area. You know, government contracts and you know, transacting business with the government is difficult enough. Intellectual property is difficult enough. And now we sort of merge those two fields. And
yeah,
you've got
yeah.
these delicate balance of, well, you know, we want the best and brightest of industry to contribute their talents, their intellects in service of our warfighters. You know, we want, you know, new military systems, new hardware, new aircraft, new land systems.
Absolutely.
You know, and we want to make sure we have the right incentive structure out there to encourage industry to do that. On the other hand, we're doing a lot of this work with United States citizen taxpayer dollars, and you know, that's got to be acknowledged too. And so there's sort of these inherent tensions, you know, pulling, you know, you've got the industry on one hand saying, well, wait a minute, I really want to protect my intellectual property because it's a valuable corporate asset. And if I make an investment in the development of something, I've got to be able to recoup that investment. And you mm-hmm. know, let's be honest, they're profit enterprises. So they want to be able to turn a profit too.
Yeah.
You know, they probably have put together a multifaceted business strategy, and, you know, IP mm-hmm. is part of that. And so they've given thought to how they protect, you know, any given piece, whether it's a patent, whether it's a copyright, whether it's a trade secret. And, you know, we're saying, well, wait a minute, we don't want to pay more than once for this. We don't want to be locked into you forever. You know, the taxpayer mm-hmm. funded this. We want to be able to upgrade the avionics or maintain and sustain it. You know, we've got needs for this information that might be different than if you were dealing with a commercial party. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you know, this was a balance that was struck, you know, after lots of fits and starts. You know, this goes back to the mid-90s. You know, DOD tried to do it by themselves multiple times, and they mm-hmm. kept coming up short of what Congress mm-hmm. wanted to see in the applicable yeah. regulations. And finally, they sort of sat down with industry and said, let's hash this out together. And so the, mm-hmm. the rules and regulations that we're dealing with today when it comes to our industry partners' intellectual property, proprietary information, you know, they're a result of that bargain, of that sort of, you know, hashing out process. And, you know, I think, as you pointed out, we would be loath to sort of disturb that incentive structure in a way that, you know, deprives us of competitive hardware, of cutting edge technology, of reasonable prices for any of that things, and so forth.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And that's the beauty of our democratic system in our liberal markets is the incentive is to come through for profit. And some of our enemies on the other side, what do you want to consider those, the Russians or the Chinese or whoever it might be, most of those regimes don't have that particular incentive, or it's certainly a very different model than we have. But what they do have is an efficiency that comes in inherently through a central government that is very strong, but that also limits rights. And we can get into, or aren't going to get into to all those things. Let's just say they have an incentive to perform because their government says to and can make it uncomfortable for them. Our incentive is to perform because we have a profit incentive-based form of economy, and we secure, you know, or provide rights and freedoms and things that they don't have in those other places. So you're absolutely right that we have to, you know, stick to those general ethics that you shouldn't be using, you know, anything that's non-public information for your personal gain or for third parties, whether that's the government or your civilian sector job or your own startup company, whatever it is.
Yeah, you know, really timely point in there about some of our adversaries' treatment of intellectual property, given what's going on with the Chinese consulate down in Houston right now, and some of the, you know, I guess we can call them retaliatory closings of U.S. consulates. You know, there is a reason why the Chinese, I can't remember what the Chinese fighter designation is, but why it looks so much like the Joint Strike Fighter, and it isn't because Lockheed licensed their intellectual property over there.
That's right. You're absolutely right. And if you know, for the listeners at home, our unit is in Houston. I'm located in Houston. If I looked hard enough, I could probably have seen the smoke a couple of days ago coming up from the consulate, the Chinese consulate close to downtown Houston. So you're absolutely right. This is something that our people should expect is going to be going on, that they're going to be hit up by foreign governments, or the vendors that they're working with are going to be hit up by foreign governments. And if we do our part in protecting things and just regular operational security, then we'll be doing our part in making sure that we're doing our job and keeping everybody else safe at the same time.
Yeah, as you said, a lot of it comes back to common sense, right? That basic basic government ethics rule that you shouldn't use non-public information for anybody else's gain. We all understand what it means to keep a secret, and so you know, treat the partner's proprietary information like that. You know, before we wind up today, I did want to shift our attention from innovation by our industry partners to any innovation by our soldiers. You know, I know we've got a lot of soldiers that are out there doing really cool things. You know, they have a lot of knowledge. I mean, that's you know, one of the great things about being part of this unit is that we are attracting some really talented, you know, mad scientist type, I'm air quoting, you can't see it on the podcast, you know, that do amazing things on the civilian side, and bringing them into this reserve community to do great things on behalf of our warfighters. And sometimes, you know, those lines get blurred. You know, anything that you would suggest our soldiers be on the lookout for if they're innovating in their capacity as a Innovation Command soldier?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, because I meant to address that a little earlier. Let me give you a good example. Yesterday, I finished a legal review directly for the CG, because the CG is going to be teaching a coding course himself. And all the technology for that coding course is coming through MIT. He's going to teach it over it's going to be a 9-week course, 2 hours a week. And so it's pretty significant from the CG himself. But something that we had to emphasize in the legal review was that this is intellectual property through the coding that's going to be considered the government's. If you work on this course and you create something that's the next great Double Eagle app, or provide something of substance that we didn't previously have that's intellectual property, then that belongs to the government, because you did it in your status as a government employee, whether you were getting points for it or pay-in points or doing it for RST or doing it on a government computer. That stuff belongs to the government, and you have to recognize that going in so you don't turn around and find yourself in a conflict later on.
Yeah, you know, that's the idea this is going to belong to the government, you do it in government dime. One of the things that always drove me kind of nuts from my time on the faculty at the Army JAG School was the American Bar Association taking really the fruit of the labor of the contract and fiscal law department and the contract and fiscal law desk books. And selling it to people. And the reason for this is, well, this is the government's intellectual property, and that oftentimes means, at least in the case of copyright, here it is out in the public domain. So, you know, it's hilarious that the American Bar Association was selling our desk book for money. They would give you a discount if you were a military or government employee. I think it was a 50% discount.
Yeah.
but the hilarious thing it was that you could just download the entire document in PDF. Either from JAGCNET or from the Library of Congress. So we put a lot of effort into that. Hopefully these podcasts have the same sort of leg ultimately. I do want to end on something that we've talked about a little bit, sort of threaded in through our discussion here, is that the Office of the Staff Judge Advocate and the Business Operations Law Division, we're here to help. This is a heady topic. As I said, we're dealing with a couple of really complex topics intersecting, and so that exponentially increases the complexity. We've got different rules depending on how we're dealing with an industry partner, whether it's by contract, whether it's just an informal presentation. We've got different rules depending on what the type of information is. We've got different rules depending on whether it's an invention or whether it's copyrighted information or trade secret information. And when you get all those moving parts, it can get very, very confusing. So, I do want to encourage all of our soldiers, if they've got questions, or frankly, if they just want to sort of pick our brains about this stuff, to invite them to contact either one of us. We'll sit down or virtually sit down and talk through it. We're also going to be releasing a frequently asked questions document that recaps some of what we talked about on today's podcast. And some of them will also be captured in our forthcoming SOP for industry engagement. Thomas, any last words from you before we close out today?
No, thanks, Scott. I really appreciate being here. I think this is a great format, and I look forward to doing more and answering anybody's questions, whether it's now or in the years to come, to make sure that the 75th, the Innovation Command, is in top shape to do its job.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining me, Thomas. And it's been a lot of fun launching this podcast with you, and hopefully we've got a lot more to come in the future. Take care.
On behalf of the Office of the Staff Judge Advocate, thank you for listening to this podcast. If you have a follow-up question or a topic you'd like us to address in a future episode, we encourage you to reach out to us. We're here to help.